Hello, it's so nice to have you with me today. Thanks for listening to What We Teach Our Children. I'm Kim Clyden. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent, and empowered children? And they say it takes a village, or what we might call today a community. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. We're surrounded, though, by people who can support us, your family, friends and professionals, who all play an influential role in shaping our children. Imagine if your parents, teachers, relatives or carers told you another story. Your life story would be completely different. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. This podcast is about everyone who plays a role in that story at every level of society. Last time, Mandy Jeppesen provided a deep insight into raising her sons who are both on the autism spectrum with very different needs. I did mention that I was hoping to bring you a conversation with a frontline worker who identifies as living with neurodivergence and autism. Due to unforeseen circumstances, I'm unable to bring you that previously promoted episode, but hope to revisit that conversation in the near future. This week's story comes with a language warning for those of you who may be listening in the presence of children or anyone offended by the F word in general conversation. From Gen X to Z, society has inordinately changed. Technology advancement has influenced every aspect of our life and driven economies, business, and consumerism, all of which influence our children and impact peer pressure, especially during the school years. My guest, Tim Niesler, is a successful entrepreneur whose childhood experiences shaped his values around business and family. FC Accounting reflects those values, supporting hospitality business owners to work less hours, increase their profit, and spend more time with their family. Firstly, Tim, I'd like to understand what it was about your upbringing that formed the foundation of your business acumen.
Dad has his own business, so he's a diesel mechanic. Mum, you know, traditional family, I guess, supported Dad, raised the kids, went and got parts for Dad during the days and all of those kinds of things. And I guess growing up, I always knew that I was going to be in business in some way. And I left school early, became a cabinet maker. And I guess I always thought from that point that at some point I would be a business owner in the cabinet making industry. You know, you get a trade, simple, grow out from there. But what I realised was that at some point that, you know, it's very hard to break into the cabinet making industry without the cash, you know, like the setup costs. And I was brought into a cabinet making world that was very privileged in that we already had the CNC machinery, even secondhand at the time, that kind of machinery was over 100 grand just for one piece without an edge bander or renting a shed or anything else. So without going back to the start, like the old days of cabinet making where you drill things by hand and all kinds of things, it was going to take a lot of time to get started and really start from the bottom. I knew that that wasn't going to work, like I wouldn't be able to be in business in that industry. And so when I moved to Mackay, I was fortunate enough to work for Black Duck Kitchens and had a whole heap of learnings from Stu, the late Stu. He was honestly probably one of the most influential people on self-development for self. We won't go down that road too far today, but I went into sales in the cabinet making industry and that's what led me, I guess, to accounting where I am now.
What I heard in there was that your father being in business actually influenced you to think about being in business for yourself. How much did you have to learn to come across into a business even after being in sales at Black Duck?
With my upbringing, I was fortunate enough to, like, mum and dad are very open at the dinner table and that sort of thing. And mum used to say that I was an adult, but I wasn't, even when I was, you know, 14. And I'd be at the adult table having conversations and didn't really enjoy being around and playing or even video games, really. I wasn't like a big gamer. And so I was around a lot of conversations about business and tax and different things. And one of the things that I really enjoy about what I do right now is that I get to help people transition from very tough situations that they've been in. And I remember when mum and dad had first moved to Proserpine, or not, maybe not when they first moved, but, you know, they'd been there a little while. Dad had done a lot of work for a bloke and they'd become very good friends. And he got a new accountant and he'd run himself into some trouble with different creditors and whatnot, and ended up, you know, going into liquidation or administration or whatever it was, but seemingly was able to trade out of the situation and continue to be a good businessman. And Dad just thought that was wrong, that there was a accountant that had things set up well enough that someone could do that. I thought at the time that that was pretty clever. And when I first became accountant, I was like, I'd like to know how to do that, but do those types of things ethically and in a way that you're actually helping people and not, you know, allowing people to rip off the everyday Aussie business owner.
From those early days, obviously having your mum, you know, at home and supporting your dad, it showed you a certain family dynamic. So how did that influence you when it came time to settling down and having a family yourself?
I think that, you know, like I've done over the last few years a lot of work on myself. And one of the things that I learned was that, you know, I had resentment around that because mum not working. But, you know, as kids, like we never went without as far as, you know, arts councils. And if anything was ever on, mum and dad always found the money to do it. But, you know, we were never, I guess, the popular kids and all of those kinds of things. We never had any brand names or any of those things. Like we never went without, but like we always kind of struggled. And so there was a small part of me that was like, oh, I wish that mum did work so that, you know, we could have afforded those things, which obviously very selfish and things that I've needed to work through now. But it's interesting that we have these dynamics of the way that families should be now, but that's not the thing that I attached to it at the time.
That's really interesting because I grew up in a working family where both my parents supported the business from a different perspective. Like Dad worked, you know, physically in the business delivering fuel and whatnot, and my mother worked in the office, and I grew up answering phones after school. So it also gave me communication skills and all of this ability to talk to anybody. That was just part of our life. And I actually resent not having my mother at home in the afternoons, but it also gave me the ability to be the independent, resilient person I am. But isn't it interesting how we can have a similar experience but opposite and feel exactly the same way about what we got versus what we thought we should have?
I agree. And I think that what it shows is that it doesn't matter as much as we think how we bring our children up, because it doesn't matter how well or not well you do. There's going to be things that work out really well for them and work out really not well. And we're all just out here doing our best. And at the end of the day, there's going to be something that that child needs to work on at some point in the future. And I think the best thing that we can give them, or the best gift that we can give them, is to be curious about themselves and about the things that they're thinking and feeling and those types of things.
How do you feel about being present with your child in relation to, because you are so busy and it's difficult juggling a business where you're one of the founders and upper management of a company and juggling a young life as well?
I only get at the moment very limited time with my son Fletch, so I kind of am forced to be at those times. Like I very rarely take phone calls, and if it is, you know, it's only for 5 minutes. And something that I guess I have struggled with from time to time, maybe less so these days, just putting that phone down. It's definitely something that I've had to be more mindful and aware of in the last few years, that's for sure. As well as anything, is because of the example that you're setting, I think. The worst thing that I'd want to hand to Fletcher is that he needs that beside him all of the time.
Well, you're also prolific on social media. So is that something you've kept away from him as well?
I try and, I guess, document and have photos all the time of Fletch, just for the memories and I guess documenting our journey together and all the fun that we have.
So it's something for him later?
Yeah, something for him later, something for me as much as anything. Being a single parent, there's always, and the fact that, you know, I don't get a lot of time with him, that there's challenges that come with that. And obviously I want to get more time with him. And so the more of, I guess, the documentation that I have, the better.
How old is Fletch right now?
Yeah, so Fletch is 3.5.
So Fletch at 3.5 has already had some health challenges. What's his prognosis now and how are you looking at the future for Fletch?
Yeah, it's really interesting question. And I only really know this really recently, but Mum said when I was a child, I used to get, you know, really bad reflux and different things and it was not easy to burp. And it took them a long, long time to work out that when I was very, very little, that I was allergic to dairy and eggs. And that was the first allergies that we were aware that he was allergic to as well. And obviously he's, you know, gluten and other things now. But, you know, I wonder how much of some things are us and how much are the children. I think that how much we react to things and buy into things, obviously, you know, we need to listen to our children and what their needs and wants are, but also, you know, our reaction to those things plays a big part in what difference it makes. So as far as looking into the future, I'm hoping that he'll grow out of his milk and egg allergy. It's becoming less likely, but definitely still hopeful. He'll probably keep gluten and his peanut, I would say, because he's fairly close to being, if not anaphylactic to peanuts. So that'll only, you know, increase. But he's also tested that he's likely to have or carry some sort of autoimmunity. It's strange to me how these things can becoming more and more prominent. Were these things here 20, 30, 50 years ago? Or is it because now we test for them and we're so much more aware of it that it's an issue? Or is it the food that we're eating? Or is it just because we try and point out some tiny little imperfection and go, there must be a reason for it? It could be all or none of those things, you know. It could be something completely different. And to me, I feel like we're becoming a softer society as a whole, and it comes back to that conversation we were having earlier about the masculine and the feminines, and as those kind of mold together and we become, you know, all the same in the middle or, you know, similar to that.
Building a business takes a lot of time, effort, and can cost relationships as well. When you went into this, were you thinking it would be more freedom, that you would have time to spend with your family, and what changed?
I think that being an entrepreneur, the dream is freedom, obviously, and not having to work for someone. Back to my dad, you know, he always said he could never work for anyone. I think that there's kind of two types of entrepreneurs, and the people that don't want to work for anyone, and they kind of can't work for anyone because they're, you know, a very big D personality. So then there's the other kind, which are the people that are, that want those freedoms. And I guess I'm a little bit in the middle, a little bit in both camps, and I'm still finding the balance on that thing, on that part. I guess the thing for me is, and one of the things that I've learned and grown with over the last probably even just 2-3 months is being super aware of how much I just want to help other people. And it usually becomes at the detriment to myself and my family. So, you know, you have this ideal that you want to go and get those freedoms and, you know, have that harmony or balance in life. But when you're unaware of what you're doing to yourself and your family whilst trying to help other people out of their situation or get to their goals, you can kind of, I guess, lose sight of your own a little bit. And that's, it's really hard when you work that out too late.
You've got partners, though, in this business as well. How much have you been able to share with them or have their support?
Other people can only help you as much as you help yourself. And when you're unaware of just what you're doing, and you kind of need to work it out for yourself and then let other people help you. When we take on new coaching members into our coaching company, Foodie Coaches, we don't reach out to them unless they've already reached out to us in the past. Depending on that, how that first reach out goes, if they're not open to receiving, then they're never going to be able to get help. And it's something that we'll leave them sit with and follow them up again in the future, because until they're ready to receive help, we wouldn't be able to work with them or change their life anyway. So it's the same with this. If you're not ready to, or you can't see it, no one can make you see it.
I was talking to Michael Ray a few episodes ago, and he's raised a daughter on his own from the age of 18 months old, and brought to my attention the inequity of single parents being male in a very mother-driven world. And I wonder if you've encountered any challenges yourself in that space, where as a single dad, people don't look at you as the nurturing primary caregiver.
I actually get a lot of like positive feedback about my parenting. And, you know, the way Fletcher is that product of that mum being the primary caregiver. So the way that I parent Fletcher is very different how I would parent him without his mum. But because he's that byproduct, I have to be very patient. And the biggest thing that I've had to work on during this time with Fletcher is my own patience. Not because I'm a super impatient person, but just the level that it requires to help him grow through his fears and that sort of thing. So, you know, when I'm there being super nurturing with Fletch and being very patient, and, you know, you see mums and grandmas and granddads and that sort of thing, maybe not so much dads, because they're like, what the fuck are you doing? But
I love it.
But you know, they're like, oh my God, you're so patient. You're such a wonderful dad. And I'm like, you don't know what's going on inside, but thank you.
But isn't it funny how, you know, if you saw a mother being patient with a child, that's an expectation that women should be patient with their children. And then you see a dad who's on his own and he's doing it. It's like, oh, isn't that amazing? You're so great. Well, see, this is Michael's point. As a society, how much are we responsible day to day for being in those stereotypes, you know, for perpetuating stereotypical roles for men and women in every way?
I think my opinion on this kind of goes pretty deep, in that we are men and women, and our children need to get both of those sides in, the masculine and the feminine. Because those types of things, to me, start in the home. And the way that we are raising our children and the way that we are in our relationships and the divorce rates and all these kinds of things has to do with that masculine and feminine energy in our relationships. And I think that, you know, we've lost a lot of the masculine.
So how do we as a society recognize that we have those traits without losing sight of who we are personally?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a great question. And a friend of mine is a psychologist, and she has to consistently be aware, because she's out there in the business world being so driven and masculine and going out there and doing those things, that if she's not feminine at home with her partner, their dynamic completely goes out of whack. And luckily for her, obviously she's self-aware enough to know when that's happening, but we're not always.
It takes practice, self-awareness. One, recognizing a trigger or a sign or a change in your behavior or patterns or thinking and habits. And then two, consistently making the correction. You've touched on this a little earlier in this conversation, where you were talking about how Stu from Black Duck Kitchens actually was one of the first people to help you in the personal development space. Was it company culture and your leadership skills that led you to, you know, looking more deeply at a personal level? Or was it your personal development story from Black Duck Kitchens? There's a continuity between you and FC Accounting.
The conversation with Stu, I definitely didn't think about personal development a whole lot before then. And I was so unaware then. Sometimes I still am now. I was so unaware. And I would just be the classic example of listen enough to respond to someone, like, terrible. And one day she says to me, "Timmy, shut the fuck up and listen." And I was just like, what?
What?
And then I was going to say, but, and then I was like, fuck, I better listen here. Otherwise I'm in real trouble. And he's pretty much just laid it out. Like, you don't listen. You haven't listened to anything that I've said. Like, you're trying to come up with your own solution. I've already got the solution. And so, well, I went on a sales course like very soon after that. And they were like, selling isn't about talking. It's about listening. And I was just like, this massive aha moment. Because I was already thinking about what Jude said, but when it was put like that, I was like, oh. And then, you know, throughout my professional, personal development, it's, you know, with team members, it's about listening, like listening to what's actually going on, listening to the customer, like when you're coaching. It's not about telling them what to do, it's listening to what is holding them back to then be able to break down that wall that they've got that's holding themselves back in most cases, and then being able to move forward. But from that moment with Stuart, it wasn't like, oh, I need to do so much personal development. What actually probably really started on the road was, you know, we were moving from accountants to into more of a coaching space, and we wanted to be able to help our clients and be able to motivate them to do better. You know, some of our leaders and our peers that we've looked up to in the past, you know, we've been part of our own coaching programs to help us help our members. So all of those types of things or ideas and that sort of thing, we've been very lucky or fortunate enough to be able to work with great people in the industry to be able to help us but also help other people.
It's been wonderful chatting with you today, Tim. Thank you so much for coming to the studio and sharing your story. And hopefully there'll be some other people out there who can reflect on what we've discussed today and maybe feel a little less alone.
Really appreciate you having me. Thanks, mate.
Director of EPSI Accounting Co, Tim Niesler, sharing his very personal story and insights into the influence his father and mother had on creating his outlook on life and how he has embraced his role as a single dad. We wish him all the best and look forward to bringing you another great conversation next week with me, Kim Clyden. Like what you're listening to? Don't keep it a secret. Tell everyone you know about it. This podcast is recorded at Launchpad Studios thanks to Split Spaces, a nest for new ideas.